Hey, hey, boys and girls, welcome to the NeoWinCast News Edition for March 9th, 2007. This show is brought to you in spite of the latest drivers from Creative for their X5 sound cards. Thank you, Creative, for screwing with me some more. But my name is Chris Vendemio. You know me as BangBang023. Joining me, my best bud and yours, Rob Bright. You know him as Rob on the forums. How's it going, man?
Yeah, not bad, not bad. How's things with you?
Not too bad. I'm not too happy with these audio drivers at the moment, but we'll move on. Before I start cursing.
People need to start listening to a previous show and hear our little rant on creative drivers in the past.
Yeah, if you go a few shows back, you'll understand why I'm so ticked off right now. I think that's a safer word to use on the air. But enough of this. I don't need to start getting all angry 5 seconds into the show. So we're going to get into our first story. And, well, it deals with a picture file format known as HD Photo, formerly known as Windows Media Photo. For years now, for a good 15 years or so, JPEG, JPG, has been the standard picture format in the computing world. You know, our digital cameras, our computers, websites use them, cell phone cameras use them. Everything that stores pictures tends to use the JPEG format. It's a free license to use. It's very convenient. It does a pretty good job of compressing images while maintaining their quality. And it became an industry standard. However, companies such as Microsoft and Adobe now are trying to replace it with something a little better designed, I guess, for our immediate needs. The new format, as stated already, HD Photo, has been submitted for standards approval by Microsoft and Adobe. They're also releasing plugins already for Adobe Photoshop, CS2, and when it comes out, CS3. Support's already included in Windows Vista. And basically, this photo format is a brand new take on the idea of the way we take photos. In simple terms, how are you going to compare it to JPEG? At the same file size, the picture will be twice as good as JPEG, or you can have the same quality format as the same quality you have now, and the picture will be half the size of JPEG. There are also other advancements, whereas JPEGs max out at 12 bits in corporate and some commercial uses. Usually JPEG is 8-bit though. HD Photo can go up to 32-bit floating point, which is huge for getting all those colors in there, really capturing the essence of the photo without losing some of the signal along the way. And it's definitely an interesting idea of what can happen and where we can go with digital photos. However, there are some issues in play, namely licensing. There is another format out there that's already pretty close to this called JPEG 2000, which was an updated version of JPEG, as the name implies. It also featured a lot of the traits of HD Photo. However, because of strict licensing, it never really caught on because, well, no one wanted to pay to use it. So Microsoft took HD Photo and decided they're going to include it in their open specification promise, which means anyone's free to use the format. However, there are some catches here. Namely, if your software is open source and under one of the many open source user license agreements, such as the GPL, for instance, you cannot use HD Photo because, well, the GPL requires you to ship the source code of every component of your project, and you're not allowed to ship the source code for HD Photo. So it's definitely, you can use it, but you can't really use it the way JPEG has been used. Rob, when you look at this, though, Microsoft is already pushing for this to replace JPEG, and they seem pretty ambitious about that. I'd say they almost want it to replace JPEG, I think, last week. So do you think this stands a chance in the market? Do you think that maybe Microsoft is a little over their heads? What's your take on this whole situation?
I think it's really interesting when I saw it because, I mean, this is not the first time, as we've said, that somebody has tried to come up with a competing format for JPEG. I mean, we've got this JPEG 2000, which, for reasons you stated previously, it didn't do very well. The licensing issues were just really prohibitive in actually making it go anywhere. And when I saw this, it's quite interesting to see the way Microsoft are doing things because with their, you know, Office 2007, we've got all these standard file formats that have been kind of opened up and given to, separate authorities outside of the control of Microsoft. It's quite an interesting take for Microsoft to do, I think, because it's not something that a business which is commonly associated with, having everything hugely sort of patented and making sure that everything is locked tight shut. They really seem to be moving away from that, which can only be a good thing because it means that others will be able to, license the technology and actually make sort of readers that will actually work on sort of cross-platform. in terms of their actual goal of replacing JPEG, I think that's probably a little bit ambitious, because it's not just things like PCs that JPEG is a part of. We've got digital cameras. It's for most standard consumer cameras, it's the standard file format. So you've got to deal with the software on that side of things. Things like printing kiosks, when you go to print photos at, you know, your local, in the UK, Jessops or whatever, they of course only read, you know, JPEG, PNG and the rest of it. They would obviously have to be updated with this. And I just think it's really, really ambitious to state that, well, we're just going to take over the industry and, you know, make this work. I don't think anyone's really questioning the fact that it's a very good file format. I mean, I think their original name of Windows Media Photo, they did a very good job in changing that, because you just can't get anywhere when you've got a name like that. You know, I mean, Windows Media Video is just kind of shunned from anyone except Windows users, just because, you know, you don't want to be having such a platform-specific name for a technology. So I think Microsoft have learnt their lesson there, but I just think this is really far too far ahead if they're actually starting to tout this as the killer for JPEG.
Yeah, one thing you have to look at, though, is adoption by the entire industry is key in any format success. And with this licensing agreement and the one restriction where open source applications that require the entire source code, the code to the actual program to be delivered with the product, well, you can't use HD photo in those applications because Microsoft doesn't want that source code getting out there. Do you think that's ultimately going to be maybe the downfall of HD photo more so than anything else, simply because guys like OS X, OS X will have Adobe support, fine, but a lot of the Linux distributions simply won't be able to use HD photo because of their open source policies and the fact that they are all licensed under the GPL.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, when I first saw this, I kind of wondered the way they were going to approach this. I can't think that Microsoft don't have some sort of trick up their sleeve of making this work. They've stated obviously that they don't want to release the source code because they've obviously spent a lot of money in research and development, and that's natural for a company. But they really do seem to be marketing this as the JPEG replacement. Therefore, I think even if they haven't released details to the press, they must have something up their sleeve to making this work cross-platform. As you say, something like Mac OS X, they'll get Adobe support, which is fine. But it's the Linux distributions where you really need complete source code open for, you know, industry approval. And if that can't happen, then I don't know how they're going to make this work. So I think this is the thing. Nobody's doubting this is a great format, but certainly with the details that have currently been divulged, it's just not going to get anywhere, because there's absolutely no way that this can take over an open standard format. If somehow they relax the licensing rules for open source projects, I don't know, if they release some sort of version of it. I think it's going to be interesting to see how this all pans out, because Microsoft have seriously, you know, really gone, you know, full guns blazing on this one, and they really want to make it work. So I'm thinking they must have something going on, but at the moment, there's no way it's getting anywhere.
Yeah, one thing which is interesting about the format itself is the fact that if Microsoft does get it standardized, they're going to have to at least release the specifications out there for the HD photo format. If that does occur, then, well, these open source guys can make their own code to interpret and read right to the HD photo format. However, it needs to be standardized. But one question that really pops into my mind and has been boggling me since I read this story is, what the hell is in it for Microsoft? They're looking at this to be a free format. There don't seem to be any licensing fees attached. So what's in it for Microsoft? I think it's just, you know, to get their name out there, to get people to maybe be a little more accepting of them, see that they're not always looking to rip us off left and right. But what do you think, man? Where is the incentive in Microsoft to develop an entire new format and then work to get it standardized for free?
The incentive is that at the moment they have a terrible reputation in this sphere. And in order for their business to succeed, they do actually need to start changing their reputation. And I think exactly what you stated, it's mainly sort of good PR that this is going to give. I mean, if they do go ahead with this and they do make it such that the open source community can make a compatible reader, encoder and decoder for it, then it's really going to shine very well on Microsoft. Now, there's been years of neglect in this kind of area, and obviously people aren't going to be very quick to change their ideas. But at the same time, I think it's a very good starting step. And they've obviously done this with Office 2007, with the standard formats there. Now, I don't know, setting them as the default on Office 2007 was a bold move, and it's mean that a lot of businesses have decided not to upgrade simply because of compatibility issues. However, you know, having readers out there for all the major applications, all the major platforms, is a really good step. And I think if they pull this off again with this new HD photo format, then it really could actually get somewhere. That said, there's still a lot of hurdles that need to go.
Right, and with those hurdles, do you ever really think it will be able to overcome all those hurdles and actually take over the market? Because when I look at it, I can see maybe 7-8 years down the line, it'll have a decent portion of the market. But looking at its implementation right now, looking at the licensing agreement right now, I'm not really sure that it's primed to be what Microsoft wants it to be. The open source restriction, I'm not a big open source guy by any means, but I really think that that restriction is going to hurt its adoption. Obviously, they're trying to already get hardware / camera manufacturers on board. They've released a development kit. They call it the HD Photo Device Porting Kit. It's available on Microsoft.com. So, you know, they want to get people on board, but it seems I don't say hard, but I'll say difficult to me, because everyone's become so accustomed to JPEGs. Let's face it, MPEG is by no means the best video file format out there on the internet. It still remains one of the most popular because of the fact that it's so widely supported and widely standardized. Do you think this has a chance to become the standard on the market? And, you know, if it does, what's the time frame we're looking at here?
In my opinion, it can't become a standard in the coming years at the moment. In the current way that they've decided to license this, it's prohibitively expensive in terms of programming to actually make this work in your solution. It doesn't work with the industry at the moment. That said, putting it out there and, you know, getting all the software development kits out there is a good step. If you look at Windows Media Video, it may not be the industry standard, but it's certainly very, very widely adopted. On many of these, a lot of the media sharing websites now have gone over to Flash Video, because that's a very nice platform-independent way of doing things. If they can somehow make this a kind of similar system there, whereby they can truly make it platform-independent, then there's hope. But certainly not in the way that they've currently licensed it, and certainly with the details they've given to the press so far. We'll see. I don't think we can really say much more on that one at the moment, because at the moment it's great, it's a great file format, but there are so many issues surrounding it. But I'm interested to see what it's like. I think it's a great move that they've worked with people like Adobe in getting this sort of plugins for Photoshop, because I mean it's the industry standard in terms of photo manipulation, and it's great. Things like camera manufacturers there's this whole move towards supporting these raw file formats, because people have realized that obviously they're losing a lot of quality when they keep on using lossy formats like JPEG. So if we can see Microsoft riding that wave of trying to go along with the industry in terms of, you know, being a nice lossless file format and saving it directly from the sensors into this, who knows, maybe it'll work. But there's an interesting road ahead, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting. And when you bring up Windows Media Video, I instantly think, and I can almost concede, that HD Photo is going to settle into its own niche in the market, just like Windows Media Video has, where it's going to be out there, but it's not going to be the most common thing out there simply because of its openness or lack thereof. It's going to be a weird road to travel for them. They really have to go against a lot of their previous policies about openness and closeness if they really want to make this succeed, and I just don't see Microsoft being that open-hearted, no pun intended. But we'll move on. It's a picture file format that's not really even in production yet, so we won't get too tizzied about it. But there's another story popping up in the news, and that's Apple's chief financial officer. Well, he decided he's going to create a stir because, well, he has nothing else to do. Peter Oppenheimer, he was speaking to investors at the Morgan Stanley Technology Conference in San Francisco, basically said that Vista will pose no threat to the upcoming version of Mac OS X, nicknamed Leopard. Okay, I'm not sure why he went out there and said this. I'm not exactly sure what his reasons were. For those of you who don't know, Mac OS X Leopard is a sizable upgrade to the current version out there, which is, I believe, called Tiger. I don't know, they use these weird cat names, which I always get crossed up. It does offer some new features. It does offer some new features, such as 64-bit application support natively. It has a feature called Time Machine, which is basically Windows System Restore on steroids, because it'll actually narrow itself down to individual files, which is pretty cool. It's going to have Front Row and Photo Booth, which deal with presenting videos and photos on high-definition displays, virtual desktops, namespaces, upgrades to their search engines, a whole bunch of upgrades, and a lot of people are saying perhaps a new interface to their Finder bar, which is very similar, for those of you who don't use OS X, to the Start Bar / Task Bar in Windows. So, Rob, I think the question here is pretty obvious. Does Vista pose a threat to Leopard in any shape or form?
Judging by the fact, you know, Microsoft have got 95% of the market, I think it's fair to say that there's some sort of a threat there. I don't know. let's see, right. Okay, so Apple have... this chief financial officer, he's cited driver support as an issue why Vista is not a threat. Now, yes, we've discussed before, this is actually an issue with Vista.
Okay.
It's not an issue with Microsoft per se, it's mainly the third-party developers who are just not getting their finger up. But for a guy from Apple to say that, when they don't have to worry about drivers because they make the hardware that Mac OS X runs on. So it's kind of like just they're in different spheres, really. By the same token, I mean, the users that will use Mac OS X, however much Apple would like to bring it into the mainstream, currently, it's very much a kind of niche. The users of sort of professional video editing, sound engineering, web developers, there's people like that who use Apple products a lot more, just because Macs are very much tailored through a long line, many years of kind of support of doing these applications just very, very well, which is great. In terms of whether Vista's actually a threat, well, you know, Apple have always been the underdog, so it's not like they can really say it. It would be more something that Microsoft should say, something like Leopard isn't a threat to Vista. But when you've got, you know, 5% of the market and you say something isn't a threat, well, I think there's still issues you've got to sort as a company. You know, if they really want to make the transition just from you know, professional niche computing to you know, a wider market, then they have to do a lot to promote their stuff. And of course, we've spoken before about all these Mac versus PC adverts, which are absolutely taking the UK by storm at the moment. So we'll see. I don't know. I think, is Vista a threat to Leopard? Well, it's a threat only in that they're probably not going to score that many people transitioning between the platforms, just because a lot of the technologies that are in this new version of Mac OS X are also in Vista. So it's not like there's a huge amount new. Now we could speak for ages on who did what first. you know, for example, this. What's this? Is it Time Machine, they call it?
Right, Time Machine, yes.
Time Machine, yeah. I mean, this is like a volume shadow copy. There's been these kind of technologies on sort of Windows NT, Windows 2000 for quite some time now. If you've seen the videos, it's an astonishing video they've got. They've put this amazing kind of Starfield screensaver background when you're trying to restore files. Apple have done what they've done for a long time. They make things more accessible and they make them prettier, which is great, because, you know, I think computing needs that. It needs to shake off its kind of geeky image. But is Vista a threat to Leopard? Well, I think it kind of is, really. I mean, it may not be dragging people from Leopard, but it's not like Leopard's that much better, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, because that's what I was thinking. It may not take people away from Leopard, but it sure as hell isn't going to convince people to go to Leopard. You know, Windows has dominated the market for how many years? If you really want to look at it, they're not even competing in the same industries, because Microsoft just owns so much of the market. What's Apple's complete fixation with Vista lately? Their commercials, now their CFO is talking about it. Don't they have something else to talk about? It boggles my mind. I get boggled a lot on this show, I realize. But it really makes me wonder why they are so fixated on Vista. And in my mind, I guess it almost gives some credit to Vista, because, well, here's Apple talking about it non-stop, to the point where you just want to yell at someone to shut the hell up. It's going to be, I don't know, I just don't see it being a big threat. Yeah, I don't see Leopard being a threat to Vista. I don't see Vista being you know, taking people away from Leopard. In the end, I don't think either version is going to wow people enough to say, I've been following the wrong, I've been drinking the wrong punch for how many years now, I'm going to go over to the other side. In the end, they're both pretty decent updates to a operating system, but there's nothing sizable in either of these. Ooh, you know, there's a star background in Time Machine. Big deal. They're adding tabs to iChat. Big deal. You know, a lot of it's, you know, we had the same discussion with Vista. A lot of it's nice, a lot of it's polished, and that's what Leopard is going to get over Tiger. It's going to be a lot of polish. They're going to round everything off, add a few more features, and really just enhance what's already there. There's nothing too brand spanking new. I know, you know, some Mac zealot out there is going to say I'm wrong, and I'm probably wrong in some degree, but, you know, let's face it, neither of these upgrades, Vista or Leopard, was huge to the degree that the companies would like us to believe. And neither of them is enough to sway people from the other camp to say, yeah, let me switch over right this instant. I just wish Apple would shut up, because it's a nonstop focus. And Rob, you bring up a point about the hardware. Yeah, I complain nonstop about drivers. My NVIDIA drivers suck. My Creative drivers suck. My webcam drivers didn't even exist. I got lucky the XP ones work. You know, it's a lot of the drivers just suck right now, but the fact is, it's not Microsoft's fault. Microsoft doesn't code these drivers. I blame Creative. I blame NVIDIA. I know ATI owners are blaming ATI. So, it just seems really weird for them to continue nagging about Vista. They have a lot of products coming up. The Apple TV, the Apple iPhone, which is, you know, apparently it's going to save the world from the hell we've been suffering with the cell phone we've been using currently. I don't know. It's some savior. But, I don't know. I don't even think this is something he should be discussing, because in the end, neither of them is that an amazing of an upgrade, but whatever. Let him have his pipe dreams over there. Everyone needs a few hopes and dreams to tell their children before they go to bed. With that, though, we're going to jump over to our favorite organization in the whole world. The RIAA. Oh, home sweet home, baby. They want more money. What a surprise. Basically, internet radio stations have, for the most part, have had contracts with the RIAA, where they share a percentage of their revenue, and the RIAA let them use the music. There were restrictions in the use of music, such as you couldn't play entire albums, you could only play a few songs from the artist in a row before you had to wait a couple hours and such. But overall, it was a pretty nice agreement here. There was actually one website called Pandora, or Pandora Box, maybe it was called, which worked on this entire idea, and it would introduce you to new music. So yes, it would introduce you to music in hopes that you would go out and buy music, thus giving the RIAA more money. Well, they decided that's not enough money. A lot of those original deals have now expired, and they want to go to what they call a per stream, per user, per hour. Per listener hour, I'm sorry. So basically, for every listener hour, for every person listening, they want a certain amount of money. Back in 2006, this cost was 0.8 of a dollar. In 2007, it's 0.11 of a dollar. 2008, 0.14 of a dollar, and it keeps going up and up. Unfortunately, for sites such as Pandora, which have a lot of listeners, this pretty much means they're going to go bankrupt. And the fact that the Copyright Royalty Board of the United States actually upheld this decision. They actually rejected, a myriad of proposals and arguments by webcasters, as stated in the article. It pretty much means the RIAA is now going to be sending bills to a lot of these companies, putting a lot of them out of business. Rob, what the hell is going on here? When is enough enough? A lot of these companies, such as Pandora, were basically giving free advertising to the RIAA. They shared their revenue. They wouldn't let you download songs. They adhered to all the guidelines put in place by the RIAA, and now they're going to get charged out of existence. Why? You know, let me not even ask why, because greed is why. That's the obvious answer there, right there. But where does it end with the RIAA?
Start?
Do you really think?
Where to start?
Do you really think this is when they start shooting themselves in the foot majorly?
Well, they're an interesting company, because RIAA, it's an industry body, therefore it's not so concerned with public relations. And if it was, it certainly wouldn't have done half of what it's done already. But I guess, you know, PR does mean a lot, and it is important for any company, regardless of who your customers, let's say, are. And I think anyone that has actually been following anything to do with digital rights management or just generally music when it comes to technology will have come across the RIAA, and probably quite unfavourably so. I love Pandora, I'll say, and I'll kind of encourage a lot of our listeners to take a look. It's an amazing service. I mean, you give it, for example, you give it a couple of tracks that you really like, and then it tailors a radio station round your tastes, and it introduces you to new music, and you can say, yeah, you know, this is kind of what I like, or no, it's not, and it sort of remembers and it tailors its selections around what you like. It's an amazing piece of technology, and the guys there who are working on it, apparently they've got sort of 14 full-time staff there, and they've just the most incredible job. And Pandora's by no means alone. There are other internet radio stations doing very similar things. I can't help but thinking this is going to just hugely, it is going to crash. It's just going to make sure that these companies can't stay afloat, because it becomes prohibitively expensive to run the services. Now, obviously, they make their money through a combination of advertising on the site, and also, you know, if you like the song, then they give links to iTunes and Amazon to buy it, which is great. You know, it's a wonderful way of doing things, and it's something that's worked very well for them so far. But if, I mean, I don't have percentages here, but the RIAA are increasing things so much. This is by no means just a trivial 1% increase. This is something quite impressive that they're actually trying to do here. If it's already been decided that yes, they're allowed to do this, then I don't think we're going to see any way around it. The only thing we're going to have to do is see Pandora, for example, change their business model in order to somehow get revenue elsewhere. Now, obviously, the advertisement on their sites, it's actually quite limited, and it's actually quite a pleasant sight to view. It doesn't have random banners for Viagra kind of chucked all over the place. But I do worry that the usability of these sites is going to be seriously messed with just because of all these increased royalty fees. I've got a quote here from, I believe it's the chief executive officer of Pandora, who says, "The record label struggles have nothing to do with online radio, and killing it will further hurt their businesses, not help it." So basically, you know, he's stating that this has got nothing to do with the record label. This has got nothing to do with the people that actually matter, which is the artists. The artists are getting their share. They, you know, they've registered with all the copyright agencies that give them their revenue. This is purely about the RIAA wanting more revenue to do. Oh God, I don't even know what they do with this money. They just seem to give more and more, you know, PR and advertising campaigns telling us why what we're doing is illegal. They just, I mean, I read this story and I just felt like sighing and crying. I mean, it's just awful. It's really just completely to the detriment of users that enjoy the service, and it's not like it's illegal. Everything is operating above board. The artists are getting paid, the copyright agencies, the labels, everyone is getting paid, and it is purely a case of them wanting a little bit more, and I can't support that. What I'd really like, I mean, I don't know if we've got anyone who works in this industry, I'd like to get some kind of statement from the RIAA about why they feel they need to do this. I mean, I haven't so far seen any decent arguments other than the fact that they think it's a better idea, which actually means nothing. If you're in a position where you have to be dealing with industry like this, then you have a responsibility to do things that are actually fair for both, you know, not just you as an industry body, but the wider industry. Obviously, you have to do things right there. And it just strikes me that the RIAA is just really punching above their weight and just trying to do something that they really shouldn't have the authority to do.
Yeah, I can tell you what they're using the money for. It's to buy the tears of children around the world. Because obviously they like making people feel pain and hurt. But seriously, this is crazy. Some of these deals that would be retroactive to 2006 would charge sites up to about 1.28 cents per listener hour. You take a site like Pandora, which has hundreds if not thousands of people online at one time, multiply all of that, and they're gone. They're vanished completely. That they can't afford to operate another day. It definitely, I just don't understand it. It's free advertising. It's something people enjoy. Why would you do this? What? If they have a PR guy, he has definitely committed suicide by now, because there's no way any PR guy would ever let this happen consistently. It just I'm getting worked up here. It's all right. It's retarded. I'm putting it that way. It's retarded. But retarded, we come to another gentleman. He's not even part of an anti-everything corporation. He's part of the Game Developers Conference. And his name is Christopher Brian Hecker, known as Chris Hecker. And, well, he decided to call the Nintendo Wii a piece of you could fill in the rest over there. Mr. Hecker was at the Game Developers Conference giving his little rant, or whatever he wants to call it, or whatever, however he justifies it. And he basically spent the entire time bashing the Nintendo Wii, saying that the system is underpowered. He said it was actually comparable to two GameCubes duct taped together. it's actually a funny image.
It's amazing. I love it.
He went on to say that Nintendo does not care for the art of video games because of the way they underpower their system. Yeah, the reaction you're having right now is the reaction that pretty much everyone had as they read this article. Namely, what the hell is he talking about? First of all, I didn't know who Chris Hecker was until he actually made these quotes. He's actually the founder of Developer Definition 6. No, I haven't heard of that developer either, so he's pretty much unknown to the average gamer. And yeah, he's decided, I'm going to get myself some attention. I'm going to go bash the Wii. Why? Because it's the most hotly selling video game console on the market right now, so obviously something is wrong with it. Rob, besides the obvious fact that this guy is a moron, what the hell is he going on about here?
Oh, dear God. I read this and I laughed out loud. Right, okay, I think self-censorship is overrated. I'm just going to, I'm going to make some work for Chris when he's editing. He can bleep over anything I say. He said the Wii is a piece of shit, okay? You can't just randomly talk. I mean, it's just ridiculous, right? You're going to love this, right? The way that he's come across this argument is that he decided that gaming should be about, it should be an art form. And he comes across this, with a very, heavy-handed approach, and he just thinks that, no, everything, we should get back to basics, and this is all about having a wonderful experience for the user. And he's going on this whole kind of philosophical rant about why gaming is an art form, all the rest of it. Now, you can agree or disagree with that at all, but the justification for calling the Wii a piece of shit is that this hacker bloke decided that he was going to search for the search terms art form at PlayStation.com, at Wii.com, and at Xbox.com. And his justification is that, The phrase art form is found on PlayStation 30 times. On Xbox.com, it is found 13 times. And on Wii.com, it is found 0 times. What the hell? This is ridiculous. His entire argument is based on a Google search for a term that he just happens to like. It is absolutely ridiculous. I just read this, and just what is he smoking? It makes absolutely no sense in terms of... It's not a foundation. It's completely foundationless, his whole argument. It's simply based on... He doesn't really like it. I mean, it made me laugh when he said stuff like it's like two previous consoles just duct taped together. Now, you may not like the console, but at least come up with a decent argument. I mean, it's not too difficult. Anyone that's done any kind of course in English at a really basic level in school can just realize that searching for two terms on Google does not equate to a kind of reasonable argument to put your point across. It's absolutely ridiculous. Just stop me, please.
I love this guy is great. I'm going to actually read a profile quote. Oh, he's not even in his profile. He just wrote this down from Goat Sniffer on the forums. He came up with this quote. I'm Chris Hecker and I'm a stupid jackass. Rawr. They took two GameCubes and taped them together. Pay attention to me. Change is scary. That's the way I see it. And in all irony, last year, apparently, he gave a speech about how Sony and Microsoft were only concerned about graphics, and that's why the machines had to be so powerful.
Terrible.
It's all about graphics. Why do we need all that power? This year, this machine's underpowered. What the hell is going on here? He does make a point in between the crap that the lack of power in the machine, let's face it, the Wii is not the most powerful machine in the market. The lack of power can hurt things when it comes to such as physics calculations and the like, which would directly impact the end user experience. And I do have one serious question for you, Rob. I know it's hard to find something logical in between this mumbo jumbo, but do you think that maybe he has a point when it comes to the cross-platform games? Obviously, first-party titles by Nintendo and the system-exclusive titles aren't going to suffer any issues, but maybe those Maddens that are out there that have to be platformed for the 360, the PlayStation, and then the Wii, or any of those games out there that are across the Wii and another platform, do you think that maybe developers will have a little bit of an issue trying to get some of these more advanced calculations in there while still preserving the heart of the game itself?
Yes, I think he does raise at least that one point, but ultimately they are separate gaming machines, and they seem to target different kinds of people, and the games, for a lot of cases, are actually very discreet. You know, they're you get certain titles that are only available on certain consoles. So yeah, I think there is an issue there with cross-platform games, because the Wii is underpowered when compared with the other consoles. But then it also costs less, and it's targeted at people that maybe have less money or just maybe like Nintendo things. I don't know. I mean, right, okay, I'm going to give you another quote here. Again, this is him being nice and philosophical. And yes, Chris, you are going to have to beat this out. He says, "We're at the beginning of something that could be an art form and on par with film and literature and music, and it's ours to f*** up." What's that all about? He's just coming up with all these bizarre reasons why... I don't know, he makes a point, and then it's almost like he uses the rest of his speech to try and pull things out of the air to make it work. He then includes on the point I raised about zero occurrences of the search term art form on Wii.com. He says, "Well, if you wish to widen it to include Nintendo.com, you get 7. So it's almost like he just then contradicts himself, but then he says, "Well, it's still 50% less than Xbox." It's just, I mean, it just goes on and on and on. I guess that one of the things that is good about this is that it has got people talking. We wouldn't be discussing the Wii in this much depth. Well, I mean, we're not really. We're discussing him. But at the same time, the whole issue of these consoles is coming up in the media again. And the cynic in me would suggest that maybe he's just doing it for the attention related to just getting the plight of cross-platform gaming back into the media. But, I mean, the way he's done it is just absolutely ridiculous. And I don't know, I think, just Neil, if you can just email this guy, somehow find his email address and just send him a link to our podcast, I'd just love to get a response from him. And I will quite happily have him on the next show, just because I just want to hear what he's going to say. He sounds like quite an amazing public speaker, I've got to say. love it.
He has apologized for the record, so he's come out and said he was trying to be thought-provoking and philosophical. Yeah, right, because when you say something is a piece of it's obviously very thought-provoking and philosophical. Either way, he's apologized. I guess his bosses, since he works for Maxis, and that's owned by EA, I guess he had some weight on him to say, "Sorry, I screwed up." Either way, this goes on par with the idiot from Epic Games, who about a year back said that integrated graphics were destroying the PC industry. I don't remember his name at the time, but I also called him an ass. This guy is just as big of an ass. Maybe they can go out and have some ass children. I don't know, but he's an ass. That's Chris Hecker. He's an ass. That's official from me, Chris Vandemio, and Rob Wright. So he's an ass.
Neowin disassociates itself from any opinions given by the host of this show.
Yeah, I should say that's not the opinion of Neowin, just us two, because, well... we have nothing else to say at that point. But that's the end of our show, ladies and gentlemen. The discussions are done. Chris Hecker is still an ass, but we do have to get rolling. Todd couldn't make it this week for us, but he did submit his game of the week to me and wrote up a nice little summary for it, so I'm going to read it for you. And this is Todd Tanner's game of the week. My game of the week pick for this week happens to be Titan Quest Immortal Throne, which is the newly released expansion pack to the kick-ass Diablo 2. Don't call me clone, Titan Quest. This expansion adds a new skill mastery, tons of new items, over 20 new monsters to kill, and of course you get to descend into Hades himself and take on, don't call me Diablo, Diablo himself. The expansion pack runs $30 for the PCs and requires the original game, so go out and buy it or die. That's Todd threatening to kill you, not me. Rob... we can't have a show without a code of the week, so lay it on me, man.
Absolutely not. Right, okay, this time it is a CSS property of the week. Now, a lot of people are using on websites just images for headers and headings in pages. Now, I discussed about headings before because I think it's important that we use nice semantic markup in our pages. But there's a wonderful CSS property called letter spacing. Which it's pretty self-explanatory. It can control the spacing between individual letters in, you know, within, let's say, span tags or the rest of it. This can be really useful in terms of if you want to achieve a specific text effect where because I think in a lot of fonts the kerning and the letter spacing is done for a particular market. It's done for print purposes and all the rest of it. But sometimes you do want to have the letters a little bit closer together, and it can make a very nice effect. Now, unfortunately, letter spacing isn't new, But it's really coming into its own at the moment because people are realizing that they don't have to just have images for headings. You know, they can do it just normally with text and just style it the way they want to. And I think this is just a general point, really. If you can get away without using images, then do. I think if you can use normal CSS styling properties to achieve the same effect, then really you're increasing your compatibility and you're increasing your search engine position because people can actually read what you're saying. And I think it's just a generally better idea in terms of the semantic web. So I would say give letter spacing a look. And also some of the other text properties that there are on CSS. There's some really good stuff out there, and it's worth having a look at.
Thank you very much, Rob. That's actually something... It always looks cool no matter where you see it. Just that letter spacing, just the way everything is laid out nicely. It always looks professional. And hey, you always want to look better, right? And of course, I got to conclude with my song of the week. This is going to be from a band that's no longer together for whatever reason. It's from their last album. The name of the song is Smothered, and the name of the band is Spineshank. It's a great heavy alt-rock, maybe borderline heavy metal, but not really song. It's a great song. They actually had a video for it on MTV for a band of this size to have a video on MTV. That's pretty big. But again, I have nothing else to say. It's just Spineshank is the name of the band. The name of the song is Smothered. And with that, boys and girls, we're done once again. Another week has passed. We have managed to call someone an ass. Rob has managed to waste a lot of my time as I now have to go and edit out every curse he has put onto the air. I want to thank him for that. Until next week, though, Rob, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. Everyone out there in the UN, have a good one.